back. WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We have gathered with all of the mayoral candidates, and along with former Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller, we have chatted with all of the mayor candidates long form. You can find all of them at BaltimorePositive.com. All of them, at least originally, were shot at either State Fair in Catonsville, where they're still doing curbside and carry out, as well as our dear friends at Fadley's downtown, where our next guest, we met him previous, and we've had all of the mayor candidates on prior to, so I'm going to give this as a forewarning. Anything we've covered in the past, we're not going to cover this time around, and I just want to make sure we get that out there. Also, a big appreciation for Moeller and Gary Realty. Did a long-form conversation with Don's son, Jeff, last month. You can find that out at the buyatoyota.com audio vault at WNST.net and Baltimore Positive, where we are mixing and mingling. Don, you and I had incredible, you know, high goals. We had full buy-in from all the candidates to do an event on April 14th. We were going to do that down at City Garage in Baltimore, and things were happening, and we had everyone in, and then COVID hit, and we have not really talked to any of these candidates since the beginning of COVID. And I know you and I have covered a lot of ground with a lot of candidates and a lot of history. We're doing 25, 30 minutes with everybody this week here at Baltimore Positive, and I want to make sure we're sort of caught up. There's certainly plenty of current stuff going on, right, Don?
Absolutely. And I think what we've said to every one of the candidates is, you know, we're about 1 month out, and we want to give them the opportunity to talk directly to voters, to let them talk to our listeners, to take whatever we do with them out on social media, because we think this election matters. We want people to vote. We want a great turnout. And with that, we welcome mayoral candidate Thuru Vigniraja. Thuru, welcome back to Baltimore Positive.
Great to hear your voices, Don, Nestor. Thanks for having me back. It's strange times, and it was nice to reminisce about simpler times at Fadley's, but good to be on, and thankful that you guys are paying so much attention to this critical race.
Well, you know, I've paid a lot of attention. I don't think your platform's changed, right, from the beginning, and you were one of the first candidates that visited. I met you literally for the first time last year in September at Maritime Magic. I remember when I didn't know how to pronounce your name, bro. the rest of the city was the same thing. But, you know, then COVID hits, and now there's the fallout of all this. Man, the heaviness of all of running Baltimore, we've talked about taxes and crime and education and like all of those things. Now there's COVID to throw into this. And then there's also the part where we've added 5 weeks to the election cycle. You guys can't shake hands. Anything any of the mayoral candidates had to get out onto the street is now over with. It's sort of changed everything, I think, for all of you equally to some degree.
Yeah, I think that's right. And let's start with the impact on politics. These are uncertain times. There's a lot of chaos. If anybody's telling you they know who's going to vote and how they're going to vote, and they're kidding themselves, and they don't appreciate the complexity of the fog that we are in. What I said from the very beginning, when they said, well, is this good for your campaign? There's a lot of people that says this really benefits your campaign. And I said, look, we're a local campaign in the middle of a global pandemic. Let's keep some perspective. Whatever Governor Hogan does is going to, I hope, be guided by what's best for the public health of Baltimore and for the state of Maryland and, frankly, the nation. And we will roll with it. Candidly, because we are a nimble, innovative campaign, we've been that way the entire time because we have the resources and the creativity. As we enter this last chapter, I think we're well positioned to deal with it. But that actually, I think, has to do with the broader question of what kind of leader are we looking for at a moment like this? Because, Don, Nestor, I think the paradigm has changed a little bit. Back in simpler times, it was crime. It was carjackings. It was killings. It was the chaos of that daily drumbeat of stories that define the local and national headlines around Baltimore. Now I think people realize that we certainly need a crime fighter. But we also need someone who can fight a two-front war, because we don't know what that next crisis is. We don't know what that next complex question is. And I think in some respects, one of the reasons why our campaign has gained even more steam, notwithstanding the circumstances, is people say, look, I can't take chance at an out-of-touch leader, an inexperienced leader, or a leader with too many question marks. We need somebody who has wrestled with some of the most complex questions on crime and beyond, and Thuru Vigniraja presents that candidate. And we're really, really thrilled that people appreciate the importance of this election at this unique time. And I think we're well regarded in that respect, but we can't lose sight of the fact that these are incredibly terrifying times, and people are looking for some confidence, and they're looking for a leader who can shepherd us through it.
Theroux, it's so interesting that you highlight the pivot of this election, because Nestor and I were just talking recently about the fact that 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, when we chatted with each of you, there was no discussion about an impending fiscal crisis facing local government. And now, front and center, in addition to everything else on a mayor's plate, whoever wins this election and takes office in November is going to be talking about one of the most daunting fiscal crises to face this city in terms of lost revenue, perhaps restructuring union contracts, potential layoffs and furloughs, delaying school projects. Tell voters, Theroux, from your perspective, how you're ready to meet that crisis, because I think that's now folks are saying, all right, we now need a fiscal manager as well. So what makes you the guy to handle the city's finances in this mess?
Absolutely. And look, I think biography matters here a lot. I'm not the son of privilege. I'm the son of city school teachers. And I went from local public schools, Edmondson Heights, Woodlawn High School, to Yale College and Harvard Law School. I clerked on the Supreme Court. I was president of the Harvard Law Review. I was at McKinsey between college and law school, this preeminent consultancy that tackled tough problems in business and finance. I'm a partner at DLA Piper, the largest law firm in the world. And in between was a devoted career to fighting crime as a federal city and a federal and city prosecutor and deputy attorney general for Maryland. I think what you're looking for is actually a leader who is prepared to take on the next great challenge, whatever it is. We're going to talk about our economic recovery plan in just a moment. I'm very proud of it. But almost more important is, what is the next disaster? What is the next challenge? We know crime's going to be there. It was the crisis before COVID hit. It will endure after this terrible pandemic recedes. But we need a leader who can take on really complicated problems. And when we talk about the economic recovery plan, I like to remind people that it wasn't something new. We were proposing cutting property taxes last summer. We were proposing fiscal stimulus to get jobs and our jobs going and our streets and bridges rebuilt, our schools with air conditioning and heating units. We were talking about all of that before. What allowed us to bring that front and center was this terrible economic situation. When we put out our economic recovery plan a few weeks ago, it was pretty monumental. It was a 35-page plan. It had three horizons: the immediate disaster relief, the 6 to 18 months, the middle term, as well as the long-term 5 to 10-year horizon. And Anirban Basu, everybody knows, the preeminent economist here in the Maryland area, said, look, I don't endorse, I'm nonpartisan, but this is a great vision for Baltimore. The Maryland Public Policy Institute said that the plans of our rivals, this is again a nonpartisan think tank, said the plans of our rivals are quiet, predictable, and vague. And this sets a high bar, Vignaraj's does. I was really proud of that, because what we are talking about is a detailed roadmap to get us through this. It's not the traditional sound bites and platitudes. For God's sakes, if there was ever a time when we didn't need people just to promise, you know, unity and we need more than that. People need to have their confidence uplifted by having the details. And we laid out $250 million of stimulus money right now to get heating and air conditioning units into our schools, to get road repairs done when the streets are as sparse as they have ever been. A middle-term project of cutting property taxes in half over 10 years, as well as stimulating 10 specific industries. A long-term horizon, $4 billion in stimulus money to do some Herculean infrastructure investments. Washington, D.C. invests $500 million a year in infrastructure investment. Baltimore does zero. It's really ridiculous. And so you hear about people saying, well, we got these great plans on paper. We've got, you know, these great things that we did in other contexts. Baltimore is really complicated. And the fact that we got such great praise from our locals is something I'm very, very proud of.
Well, Theroux, I mean, infrastructure is not going to get you elected. It's not sexy. I think it's awesome. I mean, Don would tell you I'm the infrastructure guy. I'm the clean water guy as I, you know, talk about clean water. And we talk about, you know, public safety issues. We talk about lead paint and things that that you've talked about. And I've been out at your website here, and I will let everybody know you can find Theroux at Theroux2020.com for all of his vision and campaign events. There are no events, but there's some online events like this. I guess between now and June 2nd, but just you know, in the whole scope of everything we talk about here, infrastructure, what's going on as a landowner, as a guy who cannot sell my condo at the harbor, which is why I'm talking to mayoral candidates as well as not having baseball right now. But you know, the whole idea of what's underneath the city and the sludge that's coming down, you know, down the hill into the harbor on those days. I look down to the harbor and I'm like, why is the harbor so brown? You know, and so yeah. So I think people were like, well, crime's more important and schools are more important than education and economic development and all that. I'm like, well, what happens when we can't flush our toilets? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's where COVID comes in, where we've seen down on Pennsylvania Avenue what abject incompetence looks like. I think we've seen a couple of mayors here, you know, in various ways that have let the people down, which is where what's brought us all where we are. Infrastructure is not sexy. It's not going to get you elected, but it's so necessary, man.
Well, absolutely. And look, I think there's different ways that different voters think about this problem. And I think you guys have known I've ran a very, very positive campaign around ideas, solutions. I'm also not afraid, however, to show some contrast between us and my opponents. You've got folks that have been in these positions for years. They were there when the problems were worse. They were there when the problems were a little bit better. But they were there contributing to the mess. City contractors being able to give political donations and then get sweetheart deals in exchange, the failure to do audits, the schools not getting heating or air conditioning, the kind of pay-to-play culture, that corruption has been here literally for a generation. And if you think that Jack Young, Brandon Scott, Sheila Dixon, TJ Smith are going to change in that regard, I respectfully submit that they have had their chance. They haven't led, and I will. Now, when you look at the folks that are framing themselves as outsiders, I think you very quickly realize that there is a really complicated management challenge here. And someone who is struggling to run a basic campaign, that's a red flag. And someone who's never seen the morass of local government, I think that's a red flag. I am very proud to bring in an outside vision, a true new blueprint for Baltimore, one that is certainly focused on crime. You know, we don't need another politician. We don't need some policy wonk. We don't need a banker or a spokesperson. We need a prosecutor to clean up this mess. That's my pitch. But beyond that, I think we need somebody who's got the heart and soul of Baltimore in mind. You know, we've released two commercials in the last couple of weeks, big, you know, TV, wonderful commercials. We produced them in-house, and they're such sources of pride because they're not traditional commercials. One of them is about doing it now. And it's a series of things we have done during the campaign over my career to actually get stuff done, picking up the trash, making sure that the water bills are right, getting squeegee boys jobs, getting justice for a 12-year-old murder victim. And then the second one is called Do What's Right. And that one's about having the courage to stand up when no one else would. And there's example after example in this short 30-second commercial where I was willing to do something that was unpopular, but was necessary. It was the right thing to do, but polling didn't tell you you had to do it. And I think more than ever, having somebody who has the courage of their convictions, who's ready to stand up and fight for Baltimore, my God, if there's ever a moment we needed something like that, I think it is now.
Well, Theroux, I want to jump in on that point because I think that's really interesting. We've spent some time talking with Patrick Gonzalez. We've talked with other pollsters. And one of the things, without getting into the horse race, and we can talk a little bit about the horse race later in the interview, but without getting into the horse race, one of the things that does appear consistent across every poll is 70% or more being dissatisfied with the status quo. So having, and I'm sure your internal polling reflects that as well, it seems fairly consistent. Having said that, then, make it really clear for our listeners why they should believe that a Vignaraj administration will be different when they're already worn out. And quite frankly, so many city voters just don't believe anymore. Why will Farooq's administration look different?
And let me give you a couple. Yeah. You know, I think the proof is in the pudding. I'm going to give you a couple of examples of things that we have done that, frankly, the other campaigns have just been unwilling to do. When the comptroller's shenanigans became public, we were the first to call for her resignation. She had taken
You're talking about Joan Pratt, right?
That's right. That's right. You know, she'd taken money from a person who was in the middle of a federal investigation, Mr. Grant. She had acknowledged that she hadn't included his contributions on a tax return she had filed with Catherine Pugh. This is the central ledger keeper for Baltimore City. It was either embarrassing or it was worse. And I called for her resignation. And we heard all across the city that this was an obvious one. The question wasn't why we were calling it. It was why was no one else? And the reason is because there is this cozy culture in Baltimore where everybody looks out for one another. They're buddies. They're friends. And it's hard to call out your friend. It's hard to call out the person who you gave a job to. And as a consequence of that, literally from TJ to Jack to Brandon to Mary to Sheila, no one else was willing to say what was obvious. But it wasn't just Joan Pratt. We were the first to call out Daryl D'Souza and call for his resignation. We were the first to call out Catherine Pugh and call for her resignation. I actually think the courage to be able to stand up and say, if you've done something like that that's wrong, you got to step down because the bar has to be as high as it's ever been in Baltimore. I think that shows our willingness to do something, even though it means somebody's not going to like me. But the second thing I want to talk about is the willingness to lead. Last April, I announced on the 10th, on the 15th, I filed my taxes. On the 16th, I released 5 years of federal and state taxes, becoming the first mayoral campaign in Baltimore history. For 9 months, no one else did. Eventually, media outlets and everybody else started putting pressure. They said, 75% of people said, we're not going to elect you if you don't put out your taxes. And slowly but surely, a couple of the other campaigns did it. But we had to show them that it was the bar that had to be set. On aerial surveillance, before I was a candidate, I said, look, the way we did it in 2016 was indefensible and likely unconstitutional, but here's a way you could do it that would be effective as well as constitutional. I wrote it in the Baltimore Sun. I didn't equivocate. I didn't bump the decision to the police commission. This is a hard call. Some number of people are going to vote against me because of my position on that. But I came out for that. Now, all but one candidate supports it. You know what they waited for? An Able Foundation poll, a poll funded by the Able Foundation that said that 80% of African Americans support aerial surveillance. I just don't need to wait for the poll to say what's right. I don't need to wait for the pressure to do what is necessary. And that kind of willingness to just go in there and do what's best for Baltimore, it's what's motivated me my whole life. I don't need this job. I want it desperately. This is not a career move for me. It is my calling. I tell my team all the time, this is the hardest job we're ever going to have. It is the most important charge we will ever have. And you got to earn it. You got to go in there and show people on the campaign, early in the morning, late at night, that you are going to work for them 24/7 and then some every week for the next 4 years. And I don't think any other campaign has come close to showing what it looks like to appreciate the urgency, the desperate situation that people in Baltimore are. It's just politics as usual. Their commercials are the same. Their campaigns are the same. They'll attack us at some point. You know, we start leading in the polls, then we get attacked. We start leading in the money race, we get attacked. That's just politics as usual. You will notice that I have been measured in my criticisms of my opponents. I have pointed out, I think, some specific contrasts, but my bigger point is Baltimore needs some hope, it needs some ideas, it needs some solutions, but most of all, it needs some leadership. And I think I said this to you guys before. I'll close this point out here. There is something that is philosophical that distinguishes our campaign from every other. It is an attitude on what leadership is. There's a mayor who once said, if a pigeon dies in the park, it's my fault. That's not what city politicians do. They blame others. They blame their predecessors. They say Annapolis is to blame. We're not getting enough power. We need more authority. There's not enough money. They make up excuses. Well, let me be clear about my philosophy. If murders don't go down, if we don't get homicides under 200, you blame me. If the schools don't improve, if the heating and air conditioning units are not repaired, you blame me. And if you're if your water bills are wrong, if the potholes aren't being fixed, if the trash is not being picked up, blame your mayor, because that is the person who came before you during this critical election season and said, give me a chance. I'm going to fix this. And if I don't, you fire me. I don't think you've ever heard that from a candidate before. Literally in Baltimore history. I am trying to signal that there is a new generation of leadership that is coming with a new set of ideas and a new vision, and that simple willingness to say, put the responsibility on my shoulders, and I will either bear it and carry it and help us lead out of this, or I will be the person who is responsible for failing. And I think that's an important philosophical difference that distinguishes our campaign from certainly every other candidate in this field and perhaps even before that.
Theroux, I want to stay on leadership for a minute because we've all seen it or what it looks like every day during the biggest crisis in American history, worldwide history in recent times during our lifetime for sure. Every morning, Larry Hogan shows up. I'm not really sure where Jack is. I don't see a lot of Jack, and I've said that out loud. And we're not seeing Jack this week from what I understand, but if we do, we'll greet him with open arms and say hello and ask him himself. But Trump, Hogan, Cuomo, Pritzker, we can get down the list. Newsom later in the afternoon. I think the first couple of weeks when we all were sitting around wondering what the heck was going on and stockpiling groceries, I couldn't find toilet paper and other various snowstorm items around here. Trump and Hogan, all day long you see leadership. I have been very critical of Larry Hogan. I live in Baltimore. Most of the time, I feel like he does not speak for Baltimore, and certainly the red line was a devastating hit on Baltimore and its future. But seeing leadership and what real leadership looks like, every American has been home with cable television or their phone or wherever it has been and seen what leadership currently looks like in 2020 in every way, whether it was down in D.C. during the impeachment proceedings, all the way through. We see our leaders on Twitter. We see them out there. Leadership, and you talk about it every day. This has been an exercise in crisis management and, quite frankly, a little message to the libertarians about why we do need a government, and government has to work.
Yeah. Early on, I saw Governor Hogan's press conference. I was with the team, and I turned to them, and I said something, which at his next press conference, I actually said publicly, which is I said, guys, I'm a Democrat. We're all proud members of the Democratic Party, but let's be clear. What Governor Hogan is doing right here is a textbook illustration of leadership in crisis. I was really impressed. There was this calm, sober, compassionate voice that was as strong as it was clear. And I think people have a sense of what leadership looks like. They want to see you rolling up your sleeve out on the streets when you need to be on the streets, and they want you casting a clear, good, optimistic light on the future of Baltimore when that's necessary. And I think what's been telling about this crisis is you do have a sense of the people, right? Even in these commercials, you can tell who's a little flat, who's a little affected, who's a little, there's a little makeup going on. You can tell when it's stylized, but I think people know what leadership looks like. And what I'm so proud of is the number of people that have come up to us and said, Theroux, it seems like you're the only guy who's actually doing anything. In so many instances, when people contacted us, they said, I've tried to contact our council leaders, I've contacted our other candidates. No one's getting back to us, and I see you on TV, on the radio, on social media, day after day, week after week, doing stuff. And if that's the kind of mayor you're going to be, if you're going to work even harder as mayor than you are as candidate, my God, what a breath of fresh air that would be. I don't think leadership is some list of resume items or some criteria. You know it when you see it. It's the person who is going to take responsibility. Ultimate, the buck stops with me, and also be able to build a coalition around that common purpose. I've gotten better. I'm in my 40s now. You do learn and you do grow as a manager, as a leader. I still make mistakes, but when I do, I own them. I'm honest about them. I answer every question. I accept every interview. So many of the candidates have dodged interviews and forums. And when it gets tough, they start receding. They stop they start closing off doors. I think people in Baltimore expect the exact opposite. And I think they know what leaders look like when they see them.
Oh, what do you got to say about the President of the United States getting up every day? You have any comment on that?
You know, look, you're never going to convince me that Donald Trump has handled this as we needed him to. You're not. And there's any number of things that I think would signal that. But at the end of the day, the bigger indictment that I have is that we continue to use other people as the reason why Baltimore is not doing well. Of course we need help from the feds. Of course we need help from Annapolis. Of course we need to work together. But at the end of the day, if your standard rebuttal to things are broken is it's not my fault, that's not leadership. And I'm not going to blame the president. I'm not going to blame the governor. I'm not going to blame anyone except for ourselves. And you know, I know this is recorded. So, you know, when I am up for reelection, I genuinely hope I'll have the privilege of serving. You play this back for me and you say, Theroux, you told us you were going to get murders below 200. Here's where we are. Are you confident that we can get where we need to go? Because you told us you're not going to run for reelection again. And I expect you to hold me to that standard. I'm trying to give you clear barometers of how I want you to evaluate me, because if I can't do it, if I'm just saying stuff, trying to get elected, shame on me. And the people of Baltimore will boot me out faster than you know, crab cakes fly away from Fabry's. I mean, this is a moment where people realize that there's no more time for nonsense. There's no more time for untested, out of touch, you know, frankly, corrupt politicians in Baltimore anymore. We just don't have any room for error anymore.
Well, through speaking of no room for error, and you alluded to it earlier in the interview, someone is going to win this race and be faced, particularly if this virus comes back in the fall, as so many are predicting, they're going to be faced with particularly a small business community that is decimated. You talked a little bit about economic recovery. Can you give some specifics to our listeners as to what a Mayor Vignaraj is going to do to get small business back up and running in the face of this absolute crisis?
Absolutely. And again, at through2020.com, you can go to our vision page. It has our full economic recovery plan. It has the quotes from Anirban Basu. It has the analysis by the Maryland Public Policy Institute. But again, the specifics matter. $250 million of immediate injection, borrowing against our AA bond rating, is meant to make sure that we can secure small businesses, literally tide them over until the storm clears. That means direct grant to them. We've already pledged to suspend minor privilege fees altogether. We're going to stop collecting on unpaid and delayed taxes until they're back on their feet. We can afford to borrow against our AA bond rating to make sure they don't go bankrupt. And the reason we can do that is because we have a AA bond rating. And that's not some trophy to be kept on your shelf and bragged about. It's an asset that we need to use. And if there was ever a time to take that asset and put it on the road and show that we are able to borrow against it and help people get through this impossible crisis, it is now. And the fact that we are the only ones that have talked about that, even though Washington, D.C. and any number of other cities have been doing it for decades, is the kind of change of script that I think Baltimore has needed for a generation, and I'm ready to do it.
Crime and the aerial surveillance. You know, I live at the harbor, famously, as you know. Apparently, most of us as citizens support it in some way. And you said you came out in the early part, and I think we talked at length about this 7 or 8 months ago. We got together with you. Where are you now, and where would this go if you get the votes and you become the mayor here in 6 months? What does it look like a year from now? Because part of the big brag of, hey, I'm going to get the murders under 200, part of this would be putting more people in jail with guns, right, and tracing these guns and literally about finding the criminals and all of this crimes happening in, you know, pretty measured areas that these surveillance cameras could lead to this vision you have of less crime in our community, which I think we all want.
Yeah, look, there's no silver bullet. There's no panacea to solve all of this, but there are strategies that will make a big difference. And in our 20-point crime plan, again, Jim Johnson, the former police chief for Baltimore County, said this is our best hope to make Baltimore safer. Former Councilwoman Ricky Spector said that this plan has the courage to say and do what needs to be said and done. And some of those things are hard. Some of them are easy. Look, we know we have to treat victims of addiction differently than we've treated them. It has to be treated as a public health crisis. There have to be diversion programs that use probation to get people in apprenticeships and jobs. And if they complete those apprenticeships and jobs, you lift the probation, and now they have skills and the foundation for a career instead of a criminal record.
Well, that sounds easier than it is, but you got to find employers that are willing to take on that challenge. And I've met many of them, by the way. My friends over at Goodwill do that. I mean, I know people that do this, but this is something that you really do need community buy-in on this and business buy-in.
No question, Esther. And by the way, you know, the District Court Reentry Project, which is what our proposal is modeled on, has essentially one employee and one district court judge that have remarkably built out a network of employers, and they use probation as a way to get people connected to these apprenticeships and these jobs. And the people that are involved in this program will tell you they have been begging for years from the city council and the city to improve things. 73% of people returning from prison to Baltimore are rearrested and reincarcerated within 3 years. That's the recidivism rate. Their rate is 5%, and wow, they still can't get more support. So we know that there's a model that can be built out, and a model born in Baltimore. But to your question about the aerial surveillance, these are the things that we have to do to really leapfrog forward. And it's not just the concept, it's the execution. I have said that this ought to be limited at the outset to homicides, shootings, carjackings. I have said that the police ought to have to get a warrant each and every time to make sure that there's no constitutional challenge that ruins these prosecutions at trial. And I have said we need to have oversight. We need to have audit. So the execution matters. And I hope this pilot goes well, but I'm going to make sure that we have this as one of the very important weapons in our arsenal. And I have always said to people, they say, well, so how did you realize that it was valuable before all the other candidates got on board? Was it just the polling? And I said, look, the polling was part of it for them. The reason I didn't need polling is because I was a prosecutor. And I prosecuted a case where a critical piece of the evidence was overhead camera from a traffic helicopter with Captain Roy Taylor shouting out the coordinates of these carjackers as they were zipping across town, and then ground camera footage from when they bailed out of the car. We prosecuted them in Baltimore City Circuit Court, and those were linchpins of the evidence. So I don't need a poll to tell me what's needed to fight crime. I've devoted my life to it. And I think that body of experience, too, is going to be critical. Is the economy looming large? Absolutely. And the guy that was at McKinsey and has been at Piper and has wrestled with the hardest problems at the highest levels is certainly equipped to lead that charge. Just look at our economic recovery plan. But the crisis that has not gone away in a generation and will be there when this virus recedes is crime. And if you look at Detroit, crime went down when they didn't elect a politician, they elected a prosecutor. In Chicago, they elected a prosecutor and crime went down. In New York, they elected a prosecutor and crime went down. And that's not a coincidence. It's because you're putting at the helm someone who appreciates the importance of this issue to all the other issues and also knows in practical ways what it takes to actually get it done. They're not delegating it. They're not hiring someone because you don't even know who to hire. They don't, you know, look at the candidates. They're telling you that Commissioner Harrison is good or bad. How do they know? They've never hired a police commissioner. They don't know what is necessary to fight crime. We do. I know what good commissioners and look like. I know what good cases look like. And I know what is going to be necessary to turn the tide of the fundamental challenge that faces Baltimore, which before COVID, during COVID, after COVID, is going to remain crime and our economy and the lack of confidence in City Hall.
Well, before we let you go, I just want to be real specific on that point because it certainly is an issue in the campaign. Are you coming out publicly stating then that you are supportive of Police Commissioner Harrison and his effort, and in the Vignaraja administration he will stay at least for the foreseeable future?
I have said this on a number of occasions, and I continue to believe that Commissioner Harrison needs to be given resources and support, but I want to go one step further because when he got here, you sort of abdicate responsibility and say, well, the commissioner will figure it out. He came from a city that is a fraction as violent as Baltimore. I don't expect him to come up with a plan. He is my quarterback. He needs an offensive coach. He needs a front line. He needs people that are going to be there actually getting this stuff done. So continuity of leadership is important to me. I have been impressed with the attitude and the approach that Commissioner Harrison has brought. So I intend to keep him. But I want to be clear. This is not one where I'm just like, he looks like a good candidate. Let's let him run with it. He needs somebody who can talk the talk and walk the walk when it comes to developing a crime plan. And if you think they've got a crime plan right now, you are sorely mistaken. If you ask gangs and drug dealers in East Baltimore, West Baltimore, where the police department has a plan, I think they will be the first to tell you that we have no idea what we're doing when it comes to fighting crime.
Well, what is the plan then? What needs to happen, Theroux, in 2 minutes, let's say? Make that your parting shot for us.
Yeah, look, I mean, we've put out very, very specific details, 20 things that no campaign has ever pledged to do. We need more federal prosecutions. People have said that. But we need specifically more federal prosecutions of carjacking, commercial and bank robberies, and gun cases, because the feds have automatic jurisdiction over those things. We need a bigger ground camera network. We need to have aerial surveillance. We need to have diversionary programs for low-level offenses. We need to recruit 600 more police officers. We need to go after burglary cases, because 40% of DNA and fingerprints from burglary crime scene evidence hits off the federal database, and right now we're not even testing it. Those detailed strategies, a cold case unit to go after certain profiles of homicides, because there are 10 or more casings at the crime scene, 40 caliber weapons, and headshots, which is a signal that the person who perpetrated that crime is not a first-time offender. They're a seasoned assassin. And those kinds of in-the-trenches insights, you don't learn that when I was president of the Harvard Law Review. You don't learn that quickly in the Supreme Court. You learn that in the trenches of Baltimore. It's where I've devoted my life. I've done my best to make my parents proud. They taught at Poly and Morgan State, at Edmondson and Douglas. They devoted their lives to this city, too. And I'm just trying to follow in that proud tradition and make a difference in the city to save my family's life and start writing the greatest turnaround story in American history.
Appreciate the visit with you, Dom. We're done with Theroux. We got one more for him.
I got one really easy question for Theroux. Theroux, a lot of people across the state were really impressed with your sister when she ran for governor. She got a lot of notoriety. She ran a really impressive campaign. I've had people say to me, do you think Theroux, if he's elected, will be able to coax his sister back to help him with city government? So is there an office for Sis somewhere there in City Hall?
I have not been able to coax my sister into very much, I promise you. I think my mom's going to make her endorse me, so we're at least we got that going for us. Look, my sister has devoted herself to public service. She is her own woman. She's doing incredible things. We would be lucky to have her be a part. I actually have made an anti-nepotism commitment, so we're not going to appoint our friends and family to things. So I think my sister is off the hook, but there's no question that she will be a partner and a tremendous resource, as she has her whole life, to Baltimore, to the state, as well as to the nation. Look, I'm lucky to call her my sister. I beat her in basketball a lot of times, but she's beat me in basically everything else. So
I heard about your soccer game, bro, so that's all good, man.
Well, hey. Listen, we wish you nothing but the best. I always say any candidate, anyone that steps up, puts themselves out there in the public arena, I tip my hat. It's hard out there. Each of you have run really, really hard races, and it's a fascinating election. It's going to come down to the wire. And I guess we should ask you real quick, and I know we have to run, any concerns about voting by mail?
Look, I of course I'm worried, because we haven't done it before, and we had a little bit of a road test a few weeks ago. It's going to be our job to make sure we're encouraging everyone in every part of the city to vote. It is going to come down to it. You know, there was a piece in Maryland Matters this morning where a commentator said, look, it really does look like it's going to be a two-person race between Theroux Vigneraujan and Sheila Dixon. And so we're going to need to know that Sheila's got her base. But if you want to move forward and not backward, there is one campaign that has the resources, that has the diverse coalition, that has the polling and the money and the campaign to actually prevail here. And so, you know, I think it is going to come down to it, and it's going to be our job to really drive out turnout in all the places all across the city where we started to build coalitions, and we're going to close it out strong. I promise you that.
Theroux, appreciate you, man. Always making time, always talking the good talk for Baltimore, and trying to back it up here and get you some votes next month as well. And I tell you what, the whole election, we appreciate all of the candidates for agreeing to come to a forum that we had put together back in April, and obviously that's not the case, and you making 30 full minutes to give us a full look of where we are, and certainly wash your hands. I'm telling everybody, keep washing
Absolutely.
Our hands, right?
Privilege to do it. Love you guys. Keep doing the good work and keeping Baltimore very, very positive.
Hey, we're trying to do that. Appreciate that, Theroux. Theroux Vignaraja joining us here. You can find all of his campaign information at Theroux2020.com. All of the mayor candidates have been invited on, all with equal time. You can find all of it at Baltimore Positive. All of them have joined us several times throughout the year in various Baltimore Positive episodes. All of them are available. Highly encourage it. If you missed anything in this segment and you want to hear about this or that or the other with any candidate, you'll be able to find it all back in Baltimore Positive. I am Nestor. Don Moeller, our former Baltimore County executive, booking all of this, making all of this possible and awesome, including all of our university presidents, as well as our Arts Week, all of that at WNST.net, AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. Keeping calm, staying local, and all of it, Baltimore Positive.